All right, well, welcome back from our mini break. our next speaker is Dale Tomasevich from Canada, and he's going to speak about canola.
Thank you, Julie, and thank you to the organizers for the opportunity for me to sing this song. I'm looking at primarily the agronomic aspects of managing nitrogen in irrigated canola. I have three co-authors, Rich Farrell, Sarah Wilcott, and Randall Lemke, one of whom is in the audience to take all the hard questions. And they primarily looked after the greenhouse gas aspect of this project, and I was running the sort of agronomic yield response aspect. I was kind of surprised to be put in a minor crop section, considering the status of canola, at least in Canada. Of course, what I'm talking about and what we grow up there is Brassica napus, almost entirely. It originally developed in Canada from rapeseed by breeding out the erucic acid and glucosinolates and some of the bad boys that resulted in a good edible oil. Oilseed crop, and it was quickly adopted widely in Canada, and currently now, in each of the three prairie provinces, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta, it's actually the largest single acreage single crop in each of the three provinces, with a total of 20 million acres growing in Canada, and I see why it maybe ended up in a minor acreage session here, because we have more than 10 times as much canola as the United States, and most of the American canola is grown down here in North Dakota. This was a five-year study so far. It's not anticipated to carry on, but may if it attracts some funding. It was to have another look at fertilizer N requirements and efficacy of a selected N management practices specifically for irrigated canola production, where some of the practices are a little different from dryland production, and also to look at the effects of these practices on greenhouse gas emissions, primarily nitrous oxide. In part, the driver for that was the considerable sort of penalty imposed or assumed for irrigated conditions in the IPCC reference levels, where it's assumed that greenhouse gas emissions from irrigated crops are much higher than for dry land in that part of the world. All site years were within our research center site, Central Saskatchewan, fairly good light to medium textured soils, and this is what the center looks like for the 5 months of the year that we're not growing canola, except usually the snow is deeper. The treatments included a factorial combination of three management practices for N and two rates. The management practices were selected based on discussions with industry in terms of what irrigator growers were doing and what they would likely do in the near future, what they were most interested in. We didn't end up using the enhanced efficiency fertilizer products because that wasn't the direction we were pushed in terms of what the current practices were. There is a fair bit of broadcast incorporation under irrigation because there's a little more tillage than on the average under dryland production conditions. We use side banding as sort of a surrogate for mid-row banding or deep banding, which isn't that deep anymore. And the side banding was more easy to achieve at a plot scale. And then interest in also splitting nitrogen with irrigated crops because of the increasing availability of fertigation as an option. So the fertilizer N rates initially that were chosen were just 100 and 200 kilograms per hectare, 200 being something that was probably super optimal, but would define, you know, what the yield potential was in the given conditions, and how much yield could be obtained without N limiting. The 100 was thought to be suboptimal, and would show the separation of the efficacy of the different management treatments, and then a zero-end check. And with the increasing intensity of the greenhouse gas work for the last 3 years of the study, to accommodate that work as well, the rates were bumped up slightly, and an additional couple of intermediate end rates for the split treatment only were added for the last 3 years. I don't want to get a lot into the greenhouse gas emissions part of it. It was done by two methods, one using the acrylic static vented acrylic chamber. Sampling was done every 2 days or so during the intense period of emissions, up to about 10 days later on in the growing season, and right up to fall freeze-up, and even the following spring, although the limited data I will talk about later won't include the spring data, which didn't tend to be very treatment-specific. And also there was the automated system installed in the split treatments in 2014 to 16 to look at a sort of a continual monitoring about six times per day in each treatment of emissions at a more intense level. And Rich, one of my co-authors, presented the comparison yesterday in a talk. So I'm going to go through the agronomic results for each year in a graph like this. If I can find my cursor here to point around on it. Oh, there we go. Ooh, that's a sneaky one. So basically I'm indicating the soil test level. And soil nitrate is a fairly good soil test for N in our part of the world because it tends to be frozen up over a long winter and generally not an exceedingly wet area, although there's sometimes exceptions. And then I indicate, based on the sort of local production practices recommendations, what the recommended N rate is in each year, this vertical line. And we can see that in 2012 it had a good start. There seemed to be some N responses, and then in about the 10th of July we got hail, and it reduced all the yields down to just having a bear of a time with this pointer there, down to reduce them by about 60% with no N response. So obviously the optimum N rate would have been nothing or close to it there, but under extenuating circumstances. 2013, a very, very different situation. We had fairly good yields that went up to quite high levels. Very strong response to N, with more than a doubling of yield with the highest rates of N. Again, we had low soil test levels. I just can't find that thing. Very low soil test levels, so very high N recommendations. What was the optimum N in that case? Well, was it as high as the 200? Maybe not. The tissue test levels of N were very high in those treatments, but it was probably something at least in the order of 150. 2014, another year from heck in ways. We got a good start at things, put the crop in a good time, and then we had repeated heavy rain after planting, and there was some soil washing in over the seed rows and serious packing, and we didn't get a good stand, which is always a risk with small seeded crops. So it was reseeded somewhat late and then caught a frost in about the 10th of September, which is about getting close to our normal time of year for a frost, but we were hoping for it later. So we've got very little, if any, response to N. I don't know. This being higher than this would make you think, well, there's quite a response to a high rate of N, but when you look at where the other treatments are coming at, it's probably nothing. And the soil test was a little higher. That thing keeps disappearing no matter what I do. The soil test was a little higher. The soil test was higher. I think I'll quit trying to use it. only the 0 to 30 centimeter nitrate is included in the recommendation, and if the deeper nitrate had been included as well, it probably would have been zero, which is probably the most economic rate for that particular site. Finally, in 2015, we have a more normal year, a normal good response to nitrogen, with the check yielding around 2,500 and the others over 35. The soil test level was moderately low, so the end recommendation was pretty high, but we didn't get a response up to anywhere near the recommended rate. Again, a same story in 2016, very good yields, but the actual amount of N required to achieve them was obviously well below the recommended rate. So the observations agronomically, generally our optimum N rates were well below the locally recommended rates, which were quite high, even when the yield was good. Fortunately, most of our growers are not actually using rates that are that high, and so most of you don't use more than about 130 kilograms per hectare, so that's probably a good thing. Check yields suggest a fair bit of in-season mineralization supplying the crop, possibly because we're cultivating it in this case. No yield differences in this case due to timing placement, but our lowest N rate that actually used the different placements and timings was 100 kilograms per hectare, which may have been more than optimal, so you don't distinguish the efficiencies as effectively as you might at a lower N rate. And the oil content, as was mentioned for the in the Florida situation in the earlier presentation, the oil content of the seed consistently declines with increasing applied N, and that's a bad thing in terms of quality characteristics of canola, but it's producers currently are not being paid for the N. That's not a routine test that's used to adjust the price, so it's a quality concern, but not one that's an immediate economic concern at the farm level. I'm going to present a little less on the N2O emissions. What I'm presenting, I'm just presenting two contrasting years. These are yield scaled nitrous oxide emissions, and the graph is similar to what we've seen. I've set it up similar, where I indicate again what the recommended N level was and what the yield results show was kind of the optimum rate. This was that very wet year where we had to reseed, so the yields were a little limited. Very, very high emissions in all cases. At the 0 and 50 kilogram per hectare N rate, it is a pretty high emission level. And we can see beyond that, everything always increases with N rate, and the sideband treatment looks especially bad in that particular year. 2015, a good yielding year where we did need some N, although not nearly what was actually recommended. At the same scale as the last graph, it looks like nothing's happening almost, so we'll blow up that scale. Same data, just at a tenfold higher resolution, and we see we're getting the same pattern. These are all very low at all levels, all very low emission levels. Emission levels do increase with rate in all cases, and in this case, the sideband and Broadcast Incorporated were similar, and the split treatment, which delays some of the N, was better in terms of low emissions. So the greenhouse gas emissions conclusions, much more in depth in Sarah's presentation yesterday, but here's my take on some of the important points. N2O emissions can vary hugely among years, more than tenfold. High emissions were associated primarily with excess moisture from rainfall, not with irrigation. In fact, almost everything was happening before we even started irrigating. Most of those emissions you see, they were, for example, all happening in June when it was raining too much and we weren't putting any irrigation on. So it doesn't seem that the irrigation is the big factor. N2O emissions consistently increased with applied N, and generally, they generally weren't high at optimum N rates, although we're often high at recommended N rates, suggesting maybe the recommendations were too high for our conditions, at least in these studies. And N2O emissions from the split treatments were always among the lowest of all the treatments, compared to the broadcast and sideband. Also, in some years, I think 2 years of the five, the emissions from the seed-banded N were especially high, maybe indicating that if that's the management practice used, we should be taking some information from some of the earlier presentations over the last few days and using an enhanced efficiency source with a nitrification inhibitor, if that's the way we're putting it on. So, thanks to the folks who funded this, the federal government, for the first couple of years, and then the last 3 years of more intensive greenhouse gas monitoring, both federal and provincial governments were in the game with dollars. Thanks to our collaborators, who made this a much more valuable project by enhancing the greenhouse gas work on it, and of course to the people who actually do the work and do the magical things out in the field that I could not on my own achieve. Yeah, it was always much higher at 200 than at 100, for example.
Yeah. You know, and that placement, the effect of placement, with, you know, we used to think, well, if we broadcast, we'd get higher emissions.
That's not always the case.
It's showing that there's things going on.
It depends how the moisture is, yeah.
And it's probably, you know, moisture, oxygen level, concentration point.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of factors.
Yeah, that kind of bothered me because, you know, up to seeing that, the song that, well, what's good for economics and optimum responses is good for greenhouse gases was what I always used to sing.
Yeah.
But banding is good for economics and agronomics, but not always good for the greenhouse gases.
And that's the challenge as we go forward with some of these greenhouse gas carbon systems. You know, farmers tend to move to the economic, mm-hmm. not the environmental. And it's going to be challenging to encourage them to reduce nitrous oxide and they can make more money doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah, to support something that provides them no benefit, there has to be other incentives.
Yeah. Anyway, great work.